Hello and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Kim Jarvis. I'm one of the technical managers here at Canada Life, and today's webinar I'm going to concentrate on the nil rate bands for inheritance tax. But before we get started, I'll just go over a few housekeeping. So CPT certificates are available for this webinar. We'll email them to you within 48 hours and it's to the address that you've used to register. There will be a recording of the webinar available from our website. And again, that will be there probably tomorrow. We're more than happy to take questions. There is a chat box facility in the corner of your screen, and we will either answer your question during the webinar, or if we don't get to it, then we will email you either this afternoon or tomorrow with the answer. Okay. So what we're going to look at, really the learning objectives of this webinar, we're going to go through the standard nil rate band, when you can use it, how it can be transferred, the opportunities that are available when you've got standard nil rate band. Then I'm going to look at the residence nil rate band again. There's conditions placed on the residence nil rate band. We'll look at all those. We'll look at transferring the residence nil rate band, and then we'll look at the downsizing provision. Right, so just as a little bit of a background, we will look at the standard nil rate band. These are 325. Again, it can be used for gifting during lifetime. You have the ability to transfer it. But remember, the residence nil rate band, it's currently 125,000. You do have the ability to transfer it, but that's only available on death. So with the standard nil rate band, you've got that there to use during gifting for lifetime. The residence nil rate band, you can only claim it on death. So as a little bit of a background to the nil rate band timelines. So 18th of March, 1986, that's when IHT was introduced. Now, interestingly, it's the Inheritance Tax Act of 1984. And the reason for that is it was actually just renamed. It was the Capital Transfers Taxes Act, but it was renamed in 1986 when the gift with the reservation rules came in. Then we go forward to the 9th of October 2007. Now, the government's pre-budget announcement that they could, the unused nil rate band, they were going to allow that to be transferred. And then in July 2015, that's when the residence nil rate band was introduced, and they said that that would be coming into force in April 17. But again, there's lots of conditions attached to that, and there was a lot of grey areas when it was first introduced. And then if we come forward to April 2017, that's when the residence nil rate band was introduced. It was initially set at 100,000, and then from the 6th of April 2018, it's now 125,000. And if we roll forward to 6th of April 2020, now, this is where the £1 million combined nil rate band comes in. And that was in the election promise that the government made a couple of years ago. So that's just a little bit of a background on how the nil rate bands came in. Now, this slide here, it's just a little, just for a little bit of interest. So if the nil rate band had just increased with CPI, then if you look at the red line, it wouldn't have actually increased by the same as it actually has done. Now, I know that we've had a frozen nil rate band since 2009, but you can see that it's a lot higher than if it had increased with the CPI. And then if you add in the dotted line, which is the residence nil rate band, hopefully there, that's where you get your £1 million from in April 2020. So that's just a little bit of interest, really. Right, so if we go on to, first of all, I'm going to look at the standard nil rate band. Now we know it's currently 325,000, and that was set in April 2009. Again, we know that it's frozen to April 2021. Now the standard nil rate band, you can use that during lifetime gifting and on death. When somebody dies, then what you effectively have to do is you have to add up all the gifts in the previous 7 years. And what happens is that all these gifts that they've made in the previous 7 years, they all sit in chronological order, and they sit at the bottom of the estate, and then the estate sits on top. But what you've got to think about is, because you only look back 7 years, once you've survived 7 years, then that gift actually falls out. It's not included. It doesn't sit on the bottom. So therefore, you've got the ability to recycle when you're doing lifetime gifting. Now, if we look at a little bit of an example. So we've got death. So on death, effectively, what you do is you've got to look at all the estate that that person owns on death. And then, like I said, you've got to look back 7 years and see what kind of gifts that they made in that 7 year period. So in this example, we've got two gifts. So the gift that was made more than 7 years ago, that's out of the estate. So that's gone when you're actually looking at that person's IHT liability when they die. But the gift within 7 years remains in that calculation. So what kind of inheritance tax would you have on that estate? So you've got your nil rate band. Remember, I said that the gift sits at the bottom. So the gift sits at the bottom. It takes up some of the nil rate band. And then the rest of the estate sits on top. Now, that gift that sits on the bottom, and this is a very common question that we get asked. A lot of people think that because a gift has failed, that you're always entitled to taper relief. But you only get taper relief if there's actually tax to pay on that gift. So in this situation, because there's no tax to pay on the gift, there's no taper relief. Okay, so if we move on and just think, well, what kind of tax is payable on this example? Now, it's not an allowance, it's a nil rate band, okay? And that nil rate band is charged at 0%. So anything below the nil rate band is taxed at 0%. Anything above it is taxed at 40%. But again, remember that a couple of years ago, they brought in the reduced inheritance tax charge. So if a person pays more than 10% of their net estate to a registered charity, then their inheritance tax can actually reduce to 36%. Right, so let's have a look at transferring the nil rate band. Now, as I said previously, the ability to transfer the nil rate band was brought in the pre-budget report, and it's actually in sections 8A to 8C of the Inheritance Tax Act. Now, it applies just to married couples and registered civil partners, so it doesn't apply to cohabiting couples. It only applies if that second death occurs on or after the 9th of October 2007. So in a way, the date of the first death is irrelevant, but there is a few things that you've got to sort of consider. So before the 21st of March 1972, there wasn't actually any spousal exemption. So if you have a first death and that death occurs, say in 1970, then again, you've got to think about, well, just because everything went to the surviving spouse doesn't actually mean that they will have 100% transferable nil rate band. And then similarly, between 72 and 74, the spouse exemption was only 15,000. So if we have a look just at a few and put it into like a diagram, so remember that it's claimed on the second death, okay? And that second death needs to have happened after the 9th of October 07. The first death could have happened after that as well, but you're only looking at the second death because that's when you claim it. But the first death could have happened before the 9th of October 2007. And really what I'm trying to get at here is when it was announced in October 2007, really, the only ones that would benefit, the ones that would be better off, are, were the widows or widowers at that time, whether they already had a spouse that had died previously. Now, remember, to claim, you need to have records. So, and again, you've got to think about if that first death was before 72 or between 72 and 74, then they might not get all of the transferable nil rate band. So I'm going to go through a few examples. I'm going to go through the colours, I think, here. So first of all, we're going to have Mr. Brown. So Mr. Brown, he died before October 07. He left everything to his wife. And then Mrs. Brown, unfortunately, dies in 2022. OK, so what nil rate bands can Mrs. Brown's personal representatives claim? Now, they've got her nil rate band, and we'll say that it's gone up to 350. They've got Mr. Brown's unused nil rate band. So Mr. Brown died in the tax year 07-08, when the nil rate band at that time was 300,000. So do they have his unused nil rate band as that amount? And the answer is, no, because effectively what you do is the amount is not transferred, it's the percentage that is transferred. And because he didn't use any of his nil rate band when he died, Mrs. Brown's personal representatives have got 100% of the nil rate band at the time that she dies that they can claim. So that effectively means that there's no inheritance tax on her estate. Now, remember a few slides ago, I said that when you're calculating the IHT on death, you've got to look back 7 years, you've got to look at any gifts that that deceased person made. So what if Mr. Brown had made a potentially exempt transfer, he'd made an outright gift to, say, his son for 120,000 in 2002. So on his death in 07, his personal representatives have to look back 7 years. Because he didn't survive 7 years from that potentially exempt transfer, that fails, it becomes a chargeable transfer, and you've got to add it back in to his estate. So his PRs, they have a nil rate band of 300,000, because that's what it was at the time that Mr. Brown died. But they've got to sit that gift on the bottom, and that uses up some of his nil rate band. So effectively, his unused nil rate band is 180,000. Now, if you roll forward, Mrs. Brown then dies. She's got her nil rate band estate, nil rate band of 350. She's also got Mr. Brown's unused nil rate band. But remember, I said that you don't put it forward as an amount, you put it forward as a percentage. So what you've got to work out is, when Mr. Brown died, how much of his unused nil rate band is left? So effectively, he's got 180,000 left. The nil rate band was 300,000, which is 60%. So when Mrs. Brown dies, her PRs are entitled to claim 60% of the available nil rate band at the time that she dies. Okay. And that's where you get the 210,000 from, 60% of 350. Right, so we'll go on to another colour. We'll go on to Mrs. Green. So she's died 2002 and everything has gone to her husband. Mr. Green remarries in 2007. And then he dies today. But what he does is, he actually creates a discretionary will trust for 325,000, and then he gives everything else to his wife. Okay, so why would Mr. Green have a discretionary will trust? And why would he only have it for 325,000 when, in theory, he could benefit from the first Mrs. Green's transferable nil rate band? So he could really, well, at that time that he dies, he's got a nil rate band of 650. So if we look a little bit at discretionary will trusts before we go back to the example. So they were very common before October 2007. They're still used today, but they're seen less and less due to the transferable nil rate band. What they actually do is, they're used to provide the surviving spouse with access to the money as a widow or widower. But because the trust is discretionary, when the spouse or the widow or widower dies, the value of their interest is not actually in their estate for inheritance tax purposes because, like I said, it's a discretionary trust. They've effectively got no interest on it. And that's why they were very beneficial. Now, you can see different wordings in the discretionary will trust, and I've got a couple on the screen there. So the first wording, an amount equal to the inheritance nil rate band at the time of my death, quite straightforward. The second one, an amount equal to the maximum that could be put into the trust that would be wholly chargeable to IHT. Now, before the 9th of October 2007, both approaches would have produced the same result because there was no transferable nil rate band. But now you've got to consider the first one, after October 2007, it says an amount equal to the IHT nil rate band at the time of my death. So that is only the nil rate band at that time, the 325. Okay, so again, that's quite straightforward. You can see what that says. The second one, an amount equal to the maximum that could be put into trust. Now that includes any unused R&R, unused nil rate band. So you can see that you've got to think about the trust wordings, look at what they mean, how much transferable nil rate band that the second death has got, just to see how much could be put into this discretionary will trust. Again, I'm just sort of putting out that really you need to review your client's wills. You've got to look at them. You've got to look at the wordings. But if we go back to Mr. and Mrs. Green, so we know Mr. Green died, put in 325 into this discretionary will trust. Okay. So when he dies, his personal representatives have got his standard nil rate band of 325. They can also claim the first Mrs. Green's unused 100%. So again, they've got her 325 nil rate band. Now, which one utilises this 325? Well, effectively, what Mr. Green's personal representatives decide to do is, well, because he's only created a trust for 325, they don't need to claim Mrs. Green's enhanced, so they don't claim it. They just use 325 against the discretionary will trust. Everything else has been left to Mrs. Green's second. There's no IHT. They're fine. But if we move forward to when Mrs. Green 2 dies, her estate is 700,000. Now, her PRs have got her standard nil rate band, which is the 350,000. Now, they've got no enhancement available because when Mr. Green died, his personal representatives used his nil rate band when this discretionary will trust was created. So effectively, she would have tax to pay on that. But what the legislation says is that her PRs can claim the enhancement to Mr. Green's estate as they didn't claim it. Okay, so effectively, Mrs. Green's personal representatives say, I want to claim the enhancement from the first Mrs. Green's. That then will be used against Mr. Green's discretionary will trust. So then there is his available nil rate band to transfer, which means that there's no inheritance tax to pay on her death as well. And what I'm trying to get achieved there is, just because if you're dealing with married couples that have got previous deceased spouses. You've got to look back, see what was claimed when they all died, because effectively, again, if Mrs. Green had been previously married, you could have four standard nil rate bands to play with. And they don't all have to be claimed when that person dies. And like I said, in this situation, it's Mrs. Green's personal representatives that are actually claiming the first Mrs. Green's transferable nil rate band. So that's just a little bit of food for thought. So again, yes, we're seeing less of discretionary will trusts, but they still can be beneficial. Again, you've got to think about maybe if the discretionary will trust grows more than the increase in the nil rate band, then it could be beneficial. It may be that you have to think about the periodic charges, because again, it's a discretionary trust. You've got exit charges, but if they want to have a bit more control over who's to benefit from that, then similarly, discretionary will trust. So there's pros and cons of both. So again, just because you've got the transferable standard nil rate band doesn't mean that you shouldn't be looking at discretionary will trusts as well. So that's the standard nil rate band. So if I then go on to Mr. Black, this is the last colour I'm going to. So this is a very common question that we get asked. So on the first slide, I said that the standard nil rate band can be used for lifetime gifting and on death, but the transferable nil rate band, you can only claim on death. So in this situation, Mr. Black, he's died, everything has gone to his wife. How much can Mrs. Black put into a bond today without paying tax? A lot of people seem to think that the answer to that is 650, but it's not, because you can only transfer the nil rate band on death. So today, if Mrs. Black wants to put money into a bond as a chargeable lifetime transfer and she's made no other gifts in the 7 years, she can only put in 325,000 without triggering the 20% lifetime entrance charge. And finally, Mr. Gray. So Mr. Gray dies, he puts in 325 into his discretionary will trust. He's put everything else to his wife, okay? Now, Mrs. Gray today, so it's a year down the line, and she decides, well, maybe that discretionary will trust is not what is actually required. She'd prefer to be able to have the transferable 100% nil rate band. She thinks, can I do anything about that? Well, the answer is yes, she can. She can ask the trustees, or the trustees can actually point that money out to her, provided they do that within 2 years of the date of death. Under section 144 of the Inheritance Taxes Act, what that means is it's read back to Mr. Gray's death. So effectively, everything has gone to his wife. So there will be 100% transferable nil rate band when Mrs. Gray dies. Now, just a little bit touch on the admin that the executors of the second death have to do. So, like I said, it's always claimed on second death, and you use the IHT 402, and that has to be within 2 years of the end of the month of death, okay? Because it's something that you're claiming, and again, like I said, the death could be many years ago, you need to demonstrate how much of the nil rate band has been unused. So HMRC will be looking for evidence. So they'll be looking copy of the will, grant of probate. Now, again, we get asked a lot of questions as in, well, they died, 1977. We don't have anything like that. Most of the evidence that HMRC require is actually public records. So you should be able to get the information from the court service or the general register office. Again, you probably have to pay for them, but there is ways that you can actually provide the evidence and actually get the evidence if the client doesn't have it. Right, so that's the standard nil rate band. So I'm just going to look at the residents' nil rate band. Now, unlike the standard nil rate band, the residents' nil rate band is only available on death. And again, this has been a common question over the last year to the ICANN team, whether you can use it for lifetime gifting. And the answer is no, it cannot be used for lifetime gifting. Now, it came in last April, 6th of April, 2017. It was initially set at 100,000, and each year it's increasing by 25,000 until it reaches 175,000 in 6th of April, 2020. And then from the 6th of April, 2021, we're hoping that it will increase just like the standard nil rate band in line with CPI. Now, one of the conditions of the residence nil rate band is that it's capped at the value of the residence. So if you're dealing with a client whose house is not worth, say this year, 125,000, then say it's worth 80,000, that's the only amount that they can get. And then standard nil rate band from April 2021, again, like I said, it's going to increase in line with CPI. Now, like the standard nil rate band, the residence nil rate band can be transferred. And again, it can be transferred between spouses and civil partners. Now, again, unfortunately, in this generation where we have a lot of people which maybe were buying a house with brothers, sisters, again, cohabiting couples, there's not the ability there to transfer any unused residence nil rate band. It's only between spouse and civil partners. The one interesting thing is that only the second death has to occur after the 5th of April 2017. The first death doesn't matter when it occurred. And the interesting thing with they're not really looking at when the first death occurred, they don't even look to see whether the first death had a qualifying interest. So if you're dealing with a client and they say, oh, my first spouse died in 2010, but they didn't have a house, that doesn't matter. The only thing that you've got to look at is the value of that person's estate when they died. And I'll go on to how it's tapered away. But you don't have to look at whether they actually had a residency. So who can claim it? So it has to be passed to lineal descendants. What that means is that includes children, stepchildren, adopted, guardians, things like that. It doesn't include nieces and nephews. It also includes grandchildren, step-grandchildren, things like that. It includes their spouse and civil partners of the lineal descendants. And again, it includes widow or widowers. So again, if you're dealing with a client, say they never had children, but they're going to leave their house to their nieces and nephews or their great nieces and nephews, fortunately, they won't be able to benefit from the residence nil rate band. It doesn't need to be an outright gift. So again, it can be a gift into bare trust, immediate post-death, disabled persons. Now, you may not see that discretionary trust is not on that screen. And the reason why a discretionary trust can't be used is because trustees have got discretion on who they pay to. So it's not certain that it could pass to a lineal descendant. But again, when you're dealing with a bearer trust, where that person is absolutely entitled, because you know that the house is going to go on to a lineal descendant, then that's when they can get the RNRB. So what do we mean by qualifying residential interest? Now, remember, like I said in the previous slide, that if a spouse died before the 6th of April 2017, this isn't a requirement. Okay, so you don't need to worry about this. The definition's on the slide, but I just want to pick out a few points from the slide. So one of them is that which has been the person's residence at any time. Okay, so that doesn't mean that it has to have been their main residence when they die. It just means it has to be in their main residence at some time during their life. And interestingly, the legislation doesn't actually limit it to the United Kingdom. So again, if you've got a client that has a holiday home in Spain, they use that for 6 months of the year when it's nice and sunny and warm, then they come back to the UK, they could actually nominate the Spanish because they've used it as their main residence. And like I said, it says main residence at any time. Okay, so that means that it can't be used against investment property. Where you've got, say, the example that I just gave where somebody had a Spanish holiday home and they had a UK home, where they've got more than one residency that could actually benefit from the RNRB, then it's up to the personal representatives to nominate which one they want to use. Now, I alluded to this again in a previous slide, but there is a threshold where the actual RNRB is actually tapered away, okay? So for every, where you've got an estate over 2 million, for every £2 over the 2 million, the RNRB is tapered away by £1. Now, what's included in the estate when they're looking at this 2 million is completely different from the inheritance tax calculation. So in arriving at the 2 million threshold for the RNRB, it's the value of the assets after you've deducted just liabilities, mortgages, credit cards, debts, things like that. But it's before you deduct any exemptions and reliefs. So again, if you've got a client that has got business shares that will get business relief, okay, from an IHT point of view, there might be no IHT to pay, but you cannot take the business relief off when you're looking at the 2 million estate for the RNRB. But what you can take off is lifetime gifts. So again, if I know that I've got a 2 million estate, maybe I've got 6 months to live, I could give away 200 of that to bring it beneath the 2 million threshold. It would do nothing from an IHT point of view because I haven't survived 7 years, but it may mean that I am entitled to claim the RNRB. So again, that's just something to consider. So effectively, what that means is when the RNRB gets to 175,000, if you're dealing with a single client, if their estate is over 2.35 million, then they won't be entitled to any RNRB. If you're dealing with a married couple, again, if the combined estates are over 2.7 million. So that's also something, again, that you've got to consider. So if you're dealing with clients that have got substantial assets, you've got to look at, on the second death, would those combined estates be over the 2 million? And then that you may need to think about, well, maybe I need to split the assets, gift some, so to try and get the combined estates under 2 million. Right, so we look at a little bit of an example of the transferring the RNRB. So we've got Eric's died in September 2010. His wife, Joan, died in 2000. Okay, so Eric's personal representative, they've got his nail rip band. Everything, Joan left everything to Eric, so they've got her standard nil rate band enhancement, plus they've also got his RNRB and her RNRB. Brilliant, he's got a 1 million nil rate band that can be used against his estate, but does he? Because again, you've got to remember that the RNRBs plus the enhanced one, if Eric's estate is over 2 million, then those would be tapered away. Similarly, you've got to look at when Joan died, she didn't have to have a main residence, but remember I said you've got to look at the value of her estate. So if her estate was over 2 million, then there may not be 100% transfer. And yes, you don't have to look when Joan dies, whether she had a main residence, but because Eric has died after the April 2017, he has to have a qualifying residential interest and it has to pass to lineal descendants. So you can see that, yes, there is a million nil rate band to play with there, but not necessarily all clients will get it. And that's when we go on to the downsizing provisions. So downsizing, effectively, it was brought in. Like I said, when they first of all announced the R&RB, there was a lot of grey areas. There was a lot of discussions about, well, hang on, people sell properties, they downsize when they get into later life, or they sell them completely and move into care. So the downsizing provisions were brought in to try and cater for those people that actually lose some entitlement because they've either sold it completely or they've downsized to a smaller property. And effectively what you've got to do is you compare the percentage of the nil rate band at the time the house was sold, at the time of the disposal, and you compare that with the percentage of the nil rate band at the time of death. Okay? You only get it if you've disposed of your property and downsized after 7th of July 2015. Again, we have a few people, we've been asked a few questions where, oh, well, they downsized in June 2015. Are they entitled? No, they're not, unfortunately. It has to have been sold after the 7th of July 2015. And so that's the key date for that. And effectively what they're saying is the bit that you've lost out of the R&RB, they'll allow you to pass on that amount in other assets, provided you've passed them to lineal descendants. So again, you've got to remember, it's not just you get this extra and you can pass it to whoever you want. It's still got to go down to the children, the grandchildren, spouses, widows, etc. Right, so we've got a little bit of an example of this. Okay, so we've got Barbara dies in 2014. She's left everything to Tom and her estate was beneath 2 million. That's the only check that we had to do. Tom decides to sell the house in May 2019 and he buys a new one. He's downsized. Then unfortunately, Tom dies in July 2020. Now, again, we've got to look the value of his estate. We'll assume it's under 2 million. Now, the first thing that we've got to do is, as I said, you've got to look at the percentage of the residence nil rate band that was used at the time the property was sold. Now, you look at, they're claiming it when Tom dies. They're actually claiming it in July 2020. Tom's R&RB, when the property was sold, is 150,000 because it was sold in May 2019. But because they're claiming it when Tom dies, the transferable nil rate band that you can get from Barbara is actually based on what it is when Tom dies. So that's July 2010. So effectively, her transferable nil rate band is 175,000. So when the house is sold, the available nil rate band was 325,000. The property was sold for 270,000. So that has used up 83% of the available nil rate band. That's the 270,000 divided by the 325. Okay. So that's the first part of the calculation you've done. So that is the percentage of the R&RB that was used when the property was sold. So now we've got to look at calculating the percentage of the R&RB that was used when he died. Okay, so when Tom dies in July 2020, the property is now worth 245,000. The R&RB available at that time, so this is when he died, so you're looking at the dates 2020. So when Tom dies, his available nil rate band is 175,000 because that's what it is for July 2020. Similarly, Barbara's unused R&RB that they can claim is 175,000. So when Tom dies in July 2020, he's got an available nil rate band of 350,000. The property's worth 70% of that available nil rate band because it's beneath what he's got available to him. So that's the 245,000 divided by the 350,000. Okay, so on his death, they're using 70% of his R&RB. So what did he lose by downsizing? He lost 13%. He lost, at the time, he used 83,000, but when he died, he only used 70%. So they've got 13% of the available nil rate band that they can use, okay? So Tom's personal representatives, they can claim the 70% in order to cover the property that he sold, the 245,000, plus they can also claim 13%, and they can use that to pass on other assets to lineal descendants. Like I said, if Tom, say, didn't leave any other assets to lineal descendants, they wouldn't be able to claim this 13%. The 13% has to be used to pass on other assets to lineal descendants. Okay, so that's just a little bit of downside. They're very complicated. It's a very complicated way of doing it. But hopefully, if you go through the slides, then you can sort of see what I've done. But if you've got any questions on it, by all means, just come back to me. So really, all just I want to cover now is, what is the future for inheritance tax? We all know that inheritance tax receipts are increasing. Both the R&RBs are due to increase in line with CPI from 2021. But will that happen? You know, the standard nil rate band was only meant to be frozen to a couple of years ago, but then they announced they were going to freeze it again. We just don't know. The trends are from HMRC that the receipts that they're getting from the HMRC is increasing, and you know, it's likely to increase even with the R&RB coming in. So what kind of opportunities, what sort of things you've got to look at? So again, we looked at wills. You've got to ensure that for the clients that you're dealing with, that you maximise all the available nil rate bands. Okay, I had an interesting question just before I came into the webinar where I had a married couple, but only the wife owns the house. They said that the husband, unfortunately, doesn't have much longer to live. So when he dies, on the wife's death, would they be able to claim the R&RB? But as I said, well, he doesn't have a qualifying interest. He's not on, even though he's living in that house, he's not on the title deeds. So no, they wouldn't be able to get any transferable nil rate band. So really, you know, in those kind of situations, you've got to look at how the house is owned. It's beneficial to try, if they can, before he dies, to actually transfer the ownership into two names, because then he does have a qualifying interest, and then on her death, they would be able to claim it. So that's the kind of sort of things that you've got to look at. You've got to look at making sure you use everything. You know, think about when people remarried. You've got to really understand the residence nil rate band. You've got to understand the conditions of it. You've got to understand the downsizing, the 2 million threshold, especially when you're dealing with couples where a combined estate is going to be over 2 million. Because as I said, on second death, it's just what assets has that person got? They don't separate them out. They will just look, okay, you've got assets now of 2.5 million. We're going to taper away the residence nil rate band. Not everyone, as we've seen, will get that 1 million nil rate band. So again, you've got to keep looking, you've got to review, you've got to make sure that your clients are actually making full potential of all those nil rate bands. And that's why yourselves as advisors are so important. Estate planning is so important for clients. Okay, so that's really just sort of an overview of the standard nil rate band and the residence nil rate band. We are here to support. We've got lots of material. I know on the documents for downloading, I've put our briefing note on the residence nil rip band, and I've put a helpful guide on transferring the standard nil rip band as well. We do have a lot more support material. Contact your account manager. Again, you can come direct to the ICANN technical services team if you require. And like I said, we're always happy here. We're happy here to ask questions. And then just finally, what I'd like just as a little bit of put it out there, just if you've got time, if you'd like to vote for us, if you like the webinars, you like what we do, if you'd like to vote for us in the Money Facts Awards, we'd be most grateful. And like I said, the link's on the slide in front of you. And that's really all from me. So we'll leave the chat box open for a few minutes. After the webinar, yes, contact us on the ICANN meal box. And if you've got any questions, feedback, then by all means, come and talk to us. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.